All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this sort of overcast and cool Saturday, May 9th, 2015. Looking forward to a great show. My guest is John Huggan of the Scotsman Golf World and By the Minute Golf Podcast, one of my favorite golf writers, and we have a lot to talk about, so I'm not going to waste any more time. I want to get to my first commercial, and when we come back, we'll be talking with golf writer John Huggan. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest today is John Huggan of the Scotsman Golf World and By the Minute Golf Podcast. John, how are you doing this morning?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Always a pleasure to have you on. Really looking forward to today's show. And I want to start with something that you've done more recently in the By the Minute Golf Podcast with Lawrence Donegan. How did that come about, and are you enjoying it?
Very much. I'm afraid I can't take much credit for the idea. It's all down to Lawrence.
Right.
He came up with the whole concept of the By the Minute, and it's not just By the Minute Golf. There's all kinds of sports. You know, any kind
sure.
of sport you care to think of is on there. If you want, if you're interested in darts, even you can follow By the Minute Darts. Believe it or not.
That's unbelievable. Have you had a favorite guest to date that you've enjoyed? I know it's not like picking your favorite child or anything like that, but just any of them that when you look back at the roster that had struck you, you know, has been particularly fascinating or interesting?
Well, I think for me personally, I think it would have to be Dan Jenkins, who we had on. We talked to him during the Masters last month. He's a bit of a hero of mine. I've known him a long time. I'm lucky enough to know him through Golf Digest. And not many times you get the chance to talk to somebody who changed the way a whole industry was done. But, Dan can certainly claim that. I mean, until he came along, golf writing was sort of very reverential, and he was the first one to kind of poke fun at things and have a wee bit of a laugh on the way.
Yeah, he seemed to always, he had an uncanny way of being able to tell it like it is and have a sensibility about him, although with a bit of a sarcastic twist to it.
Well, that's true, but and also it was fascinating just to sit next to him and listen to him talk about his relationship with Ben Hogan, which back a long way, and they played a lot of golf together. I think Dan was certainly the golf writer who got closest to Hogan over the years, and it was amazingly interesting to listen to what the real Hogan was like rather than the image that we all have of the, you know, the stern kind of guy on the golf course. He was a little bit different away from the game, I think.
Yeah, he an amazing individual. I think my favorite Jenkins story was that, you know, one of the things that people thought was he was out and about all the time with the players having cocktails back when media and players mingled and they were all part of the same sort of circus moving about. And you know, people used to wonder how he was able to do what he did and hang out with those guys late at night. And they hearing the stories about how he would always have a drink, but there was always coffee ready for him. But then he would like leave every few minutes or so, and he was running back to write quotes, you know, in the hallway or wherever, you know, to remember the story. He was never really, I guess you could say slightly partaking in the festivities, but he was sort of always on the job and always, and, you know, he's always handled it with grace. He's never told tales out of school or anything like that. But it was just, I just thought it was amazing that constantly throughout the night, he would just appear to write down his notes from the, and quotes from whatever he was listening to.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan's glass was nearly always full because he only took very small sips. One drink lasted a long time in his nights out with the boys, if you like.
Absolutely. I found golf podcast, By the Minute Golf Podcast, number 28, the one with Tom Callahan on Tiger Woods. You know, I'm not... I guess you could say I'm certainly part of the insulated public, and I just found some of that stuff. You know, I don't really do a lot of Tiger Woods stuff on the show, but I just found that particular episode with Tom very fascinating because I don't sort of have that inside look that maybe some of the maybe yourself or even someone like Tom had. That was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, well, Tom's very special. You actually. Coincidentally, I'm actually sitting talking to you in Tom Callahan's spare bedroom. I'm staying with him this week
at
Players' Championship. He lives in St. Augustine near the Golf Hall of Fame. Yeah, he's a remarkable figure. He may be the best writer I know, I think. He's a special talent, and he's starting a new book project, which I can't tell you about just yet, but uh-huh. I think he's gone public with it. But it's a very exciting thing he'll be doing over the next couple of years, and he's done some of the great sports books, I think. His biography of Johnny Unitas is particularly interesting, I think, because there's nobody who cares less about the NFL, I'm afraid, than me, but even I read that book.
Well, I just thought, and I thought the line of him saying, saying hello when it's time to say goodbye was just, I mean, tremendous on so many levels. That was a great line.
Yeah, I mean, that does actually, it fits Tiger Woods perfectly. He's, it's funny to watch him, actually. Even this week, he's been smiling and friendly, and, I mean, he's almost warm and fuzzy, but it's changed days from the cold stare that I'm sure you've experienced when you've been around Tiger.
Yeah.
Anybody from the media would know that look.
Right, which makes the line even more so spot on, because even like you said in his pre-tournament presser, he just doesn't comport himself like the same person. It's not even like the same guy.
Oh, as I say, it's almost like the worse he plays, the better he behaves, and vice versa.
Right, exactly. You think do you think that's the way he is? Do you think, or this is just sort of you think that this is a genuine attempt to sort of just be a regular guy? Is it, you know, if I could just for a second, you know, when I look at someone like, and I'm sure that Tiger's no way influenced by Spieth and McIlroy, but, you know, when you look at Spieth and McIlroy and the way they, you know, the authenticity in which they speak, the honesty in which they speak, their general, you know, you could see their well thought out answers. I mean, I'm not saying that Tiger's influenced by them, but you know his behavior in the past is so in stark contrast to these thoughtful young men who speak at these conferences.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope Tiger has taken notes of how Rory and Jordan Spieth as well are and how they behave in press conferences. I mean, basically, all they do is it's not rocket science. All they do is try and answer the question.
Right.
And Tiger has never done that. He's never tried to answer the question. He's just played a straight bat, everything. I mean, it's with absolute deadpan, short, meaningless answers, really. Both Rory and Jordan actually make an effort. I mean, I think that's all you can ask of an athlete, really, when you ask him a question.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's really all they're trying to do. And I guess I just never got the whole Tiger Woods relationship with the media. I just, you know, I'm not sure where it comes from. I don't know what the... you know, what sparked it? You know, I don't know. Maybe it was that when he told that joke with GQ or whatever, and it sort of went public. I don't know. Maybe just, I don't know where he got this sort of everybody wants something, media wants something from me or whatever. I just don't know where it came from.
Well, it's such a shame. That's the bottom line. I mean, he could have given the world, you know, the fans especially, so much more of his time and a little bit more insight into what goes on inside Tiger Woods. Without hurting himself in any way, shape, or form. That's the thing. That's the great shame of it. It's not as if we're asking him to reveal, you know, his innermost secrets. It's just, you know, give us some insight into what goes on inside the head of the guy who's, you know, surely the best player. He's played golf better than anyone has ever played golf before. His best golf, I have to think, it was better than even Jack Nicklaus's best golf. I mean, Jack Nicklaus has got more majors, as we all know, but Tiger's best golf round about the turn of the century, I have to think was the best we've ever seen so far.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you're right. I mean, he could have, if he had just been even somewhat or any sort of resemblance of a Spieth and McIlroy, how they handle the press, just imagine the narrative of how we would speak with him. You know, he could have changed the narrative of how his, I don't know if you want to say his legend, if you will, or his, you know, however you want to phrase it. It's just, it would be so different.
Well, I think Tiger's legacy is going to be tainted, not just by all the off-course stuff that we heard about the last few years, but sure, just the way he is with people. I mean, you contrast him, the biggest contrast is with Arnold Palmer. I mean, Arnold Palmer is the absolute model for how a professional athlete should interact with the public and the fans and the people who actually ultimately provide him with the great wealth he's accumulated. But Arnold gets it. And he's such a nice human being. I mean, everybody who walks around with Arnold, it's been said many times, but everybody who walks around or gets close to Arnold, he makes eye contact with them and makes them feel special. Tiger has never, ever done that, not in my experience, anyway.
Yeah. I just find it, one thing I find a little fascinating about that, since you brought it up, and Arnold Palmer, but do you feel like then the other side of it is somebody who does try to do that, someone like a Phil Mickelson who tries to do that and you know, right down to the thumbs up, if you will. But then he gets sort of railed for being, you know, phony or cheesy, or, you know, I just don't get why, you know, why we have to bring these people down, I guess. I've been around Phil. I've met Phil. I don't know Phil, but he just never struck me as somebody as fake, to be honest with you.
Well, no, I mean, that's certainly true in my experience, too. I mean, every year Phil comes over to Scotland and plays in the Scottish Open the week before our Open Championship.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, for the last few years, he's given me 20 minutes or whatever, one-on-one, for my Sunday preview before the Open.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And I've never experienced any sense of phoniness with Phil. I mean, there are a couple of occasions where he'll give you an answer that he knows is pretty much rubbish, and I know it's rubbish,
right,
and he's
sure.
got a big smile on his face, but it's the politically correct, you know, it's a subject that you can't touch in any other way, but he knows that, and I know that, and I'm sure the world knows that, there are questions that you just can't touch, but generally speaking, I mean, you know, what is there not to like about Phil Mickelson? He, as you say, does all the right things with the fans. I watched him yesterday out at the TPC mm-hmm. signing autographs. He just missed a cut, and he's signing every autograph, and he's there until there's nobody left.
Yeah,
and he does that routinely, and he's a happily married man. He's got wonderful children. He obviously loves his wife and his kids and all the rest of it. I mean, what is there not to like about Phil Mickelson?
Yeah, I just find it interesting. I just think, you know, it's one of those things that I just feel like people project their own feelings on other people. I think that's really, you know, because in the minute, same person who praises a Arnold Palmer and then calls Phil Mickelson cheesy, I don't get it. And I feel like so many times people are projecting their own whatever luggage on or baggage on other people or on these celebrities or on these athletes, and because I just don't get it. I've never seen anything. And like yourself, I've witnessed the same thing at Bethpage. I you know, when they he had played the back nine at the black, the back nine first, and so he was ending at nine, and there was it's a probably maybe 150 yard walk from the green to where the transpo was set up to bring him back to the clubhouse. And he stayed there for an hour and a half. And he, you know, he recognized this was, you know, obviously around the time where Amy was battling her fight with cancer. And he recognized some girls with some breast cancer shirts. And he's like, oh, hold on. And he went, like, had Bones go back to the bag, get more stuff so he could sign for their charity auctions and stuff like that. I mean, he was there for over an hour. I mean, just
yeah,
signing.
I mean, he's not a complete carbon copy of Arnold, though. I mean, there's an edge to Phil that Arnold doesn't have. I mean, we saw that. You know, I was in the room when he sounded off at the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
The Eagles last year about Tom Watson and all of the stuff that was going on there. I mean, that's not something that Arnold Palmer would ever done. But I kind of like that in Phil, too. He's not just, it goes back to your original, you know, point about the sugary sweet, you know, Phil and all the rest of the schmaltzy stuff and the paper. Well, I don't see that either, because, you know, if he was that way, would he have done what he did at the Ryder Cup last year? I don't think so.
No, and I think you're right, and I agree. I do like that a little bit of edgy, and he lives in a different time than Arnold lived, and it's a different situation. But I do, and he's a different generation of kid. So let's face it. So I do enjoy that little bit of edge, to you, that little bit of needle. Who doesn't like that? I mean, when you play golf with your friends, that's what you're doing.
Well,
I listen to your podcast, right? And it's
that's
half of it is you and Lawrence needling each other. So I get it, and that's fun, I look at, but Phil was the type of guy that when Hunter Mahan was on the hot box and he couldn't compose himself and couldn't answer that question after he had chipped and flubbed that thing. Phil was the one that grabbed the mic. I don't know how many other players, certainly not Tiger Woods, at least in my opinion, is not going to grab the mic and save him from that moment where the kid couldn't even come to utter a word because he just had lost all composure. Phil is that guy, and I believe
that. I was there for that too, and he stepped up. And And it was clear that Hunter wasn't going to be able to get through the question. And Phil was the first, as you say, to grab the microphone. Well, I mean, it's not to say either that I agree with Phil Mickelson on every subject, but
no.
He likes a good debate. He'll argue his case, and he'll listen to the other point of view as well. So that's another good quality.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're going to take a short break and more with John Huggins. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
La Marmite Restaurant is a Long Island landmark. The tradition remains, but the menu, music, and vibe are all new. Golfers enjoy our wine selections from the vineyards of Ernie Els, Luke Donald, Jack Nicklaus, and Jim Nance, along with music on Friday and Saturday nights. Visit our website at lamarmiterestaurant.com for more details. Choose La Marmite for your next night out. We'll make it a special one.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest is golf writer John Huggin of The Scotsman, Golf World, and By the Minute Golf Podcast with Lawrence Dunnigan. And one of my favorite things about John is I don't know anybody who'd bring up the who'd work the word schmaltzy into a conversation. So I appreciate that, John. Fantastic. Before we get to the players, just one more little subject, and just because I usually like to have you on the run-up to the Open Championship, given your vast expertise of on the European side, even on the American side, but definitely on the European side. But the run-up to the U.S. Open this year, I guess you could say, whereas, let's say, Hilton Head sort of decompresses the players after the Masters, the Players' Championship is sort of the start of the race to the U.S. Open, if you will. At least I think so, in that way. But a lot of harsh words coming from some players regarding Chambers Bay and the golf course there for the U.S. Open. And then rumor, speculation, I don't know, about or just plain, as you would say, rubbish about Davis talking about, maybe teeing things up on, making tees uphill, downhill, sidehill. Just what are your thoughts on what you're hearing coming out of Chambers Bay?
Well, as you say, it's going to be an interesting week, if you want to put it that way, and
yeah,
controversial, I'm sure. I mean, Mike Davis, I'm kind of a fan of Mike Davis's most of his theories on course setup. I think he's mixed up the U.S. Open in a very refreshing way over the last few years. I think the old formula of very narrow fairways, very thick rough, very hard greens was getting a bit old and tired and wasn't really producing most of the time the best players were winning the championship. And I think the USGA are certainly snobbish enough to want the very best players to be winning the thing, as I am. I mean, I'm a complete snob when it comes to the majors, I admit it.
Sure, absolutely.
I don't want the average guys winning those things. I want the star players, to the history makers, to win the majors. But Mike Davis, he's done a generally good job. I'm not saying I would agree with everything he's done, but certainly that theory you just mentioned of uphill, downhill tees, I think, might be a step too far for most people. But Chambers Bay has been getting I mean, I've never been. I've just seen the photographs like everybody else. I will be there next month, and I can't wait to see it. It's going to be it's going to be a test of mental strength more than as much as technique, I would imagine, because a vast number of the field will write themselves out of contention before they even start, I would imagine. If they don't make themselves at least tolerate the place, I can't imagine a lot of them are actually going to actively like it, because it sounds quite controversial, some of the things that we're going to see. But it's going to take a mentally strong guy and hopefully a real star player to handle the eccentricities, if you like, of the golf course.
You know, excuse me, I find it so disheartening that when Mike Davis says something to the effect of players hate unpredictability. I mean, to me, then basically what you're saying is that only players want to be able to, you know, play golf like a video game, I guess is my point.
Well, I mean, I think that's certainly true. That's more true over here in America than it is in the European Tour, although the European Tour is headed in the same kind of direction.
Right.
I bang on about this constantly, and I'm almost getting tired of listening myself talk about it, but the biggest criticism I have of the game at the top level, as I say, especially in America, is the sameness of the challenge. It's not to say it's an easy challenge, it's a very difficult challenge, but there's too much of it is the same every week. That, you know, the fairways are the same width, the rough is the same length, the depth of the sand in the bunkers is the same, and more especially, the speed of the greens seems to me to be almost constant. Now, all that happens when you do that too much is that the players become very, very good at a very narrow form of golf.
Sure.
And when you take them outside that narrowness, which we probably will see at the US Open next month, and most of them get a wee bit lost, which is why I like the things should be mixed up. I mean, I've said about the European Tour that they should have a links golf season, maybe a month long, 3 weeks to a month long, that climaxes with the Open every year.
Right.
Just to mix things up, just kind of like the tennis do with the clay court and the grass and all the rest of it. That should be done in golf as well. And the European Tour should be off to Australia for a month. They should be, you know, widening their horizons. But that's especially true of the PGA Tour. They need to get themselves out and about and play different courses. I mean, who decided, for example, that slow greens were bad?
Right, sure.
You know, I don't get that. I mean, why don't we have something different every week, or at least mix it up more than they do right now?
Absolutely, and you can certainly have a far more interesting green if you were able to slow it down a little bit. And so
you can get slopes and all the rest of it. I mean, there's some great greens. St. Andrews, I mean, the sacrilege that was perpetrated on the old course,
sure,
where they sliced the top off the slope on the 11th green because they deemed it too steep. Well, the problem wasn't the steepness of the green. The problem was the speed of the green. The green was too fast. It was never designed to be played at that speed.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to just briefly, because we're kind of running out of time here, but it should be an interesting event. From the course to transportation to it just seems to me like it has as much intrigue in every aspect of a tournament that I can remember leading up to a U.S. Open. So we'll be interesting to find out what happens there. The Players Championship. Anything to this point? Sort of a strange leaderboard, right? After 2 days.
Well, I kind of like that. Two or three days of, you know, mixing things up and a few unknown names and guys you don't expect and all the rest. I mean, that I like the kind of randomness of that. The golf is not supposed to be fair or predictable, all the rest of it.
Sure.
But having said that, I think there's a few guys that are lurking just off the pace, Rory and Ricky Fowler and those sort of guys. Those are the guys that I would like to see come through on the back nine tomorrow afternoon. As I say, I'm a bit snobby when it comes to that.
Right
now, I think it's terrific. I mean, you know, you don't, especially if you're a journalist, I mean, the last thing you want is the Jordan Spieth scenario that we had at the Masters, where you've written everything you know about Jordan Spieth by the halfway mark and there's nothing left to be said over the last 2 days.
Right, exactly.
The danger when someone leads from start to finish.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just, like you said, an eclectic leaderboard. Kevin Na, Jerry Kelly. I mean, just those two alone. But you're right. Ricky is lurking a couple shots back, and Zach Johnson and Bill Haas. And so sort of an interesting leaderboard. And now all we have to do is stop trying to call it the fifth major, and it'll be a great tournament.
Well, it's never going to be it was never going to be a major for me when they made a big mistake very early on with the Players' Championship when they had a pro-am. Majors don't have pro-ams.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And well, John, I can't thank you enough for being part of the program. One of my favorite golf writers, and I really appreciate your time and your thoughts. It's good stuff. Thank you.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, John. All right. Sure. That was John Huggins, the author. The writer of the Scotsman Golf World by the Minute Golf Podcast, and with Lawrence Donegan, and just great stuff. His thoughts are fantastic, insightful. Thoughtful. It's great stuff. We're going to take a short break. We'll wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, re-gripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025. 631-563-2025. Or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for that pretty cool lead-in music there, Trevor. Really appreciate that. That's my man Trevor behind the glass working his magic. Gets the show going. Got the music here. And really appreciate everything he does for me and the program. He's a good guy. So and he's had a tough week. So I keep telling Trevor if he only just took up golf, he'd learn to relax a little more. But we're working on it. We're working on it. All right, folks, that's all we have for today. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate John Huggins. Really just fantastic stuff talking today. Tiger Woods and the Players and Chambers Bay. Just great stuff. He's so good at what he does and clearly knows has the words to do it with. So really appreciate his time. So thank you, folks, and we'll see you next week. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.